Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lerzel.
This is Stephanie Domingo.
And this is the very last episode of season four of Beyond Reproach.
We did it. This season has flown by.
I know.
But it's wild. I think this year has flown by.
It absolutely has.
It's so weird that it's like almost the summer.
I know.
Where was the spring? Where was it?
It was like 50 and gray the entire spring. That's not true. There were some.
There were some beautiful days. Yeah. But it just went so fast. Yeah. Like there were beautiful days in March and then it was May.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Oh, well, we come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. We're both on Lenape land today.
Yes.
Recording from Bushwick. For those of you who do not know, Beyond Reproach is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. As per usual, we be drinking and we be swearing.
Yes.
So today, we are drinking a Sazerac.
Ooh.
A Sazerac. It's fun to say.
It is.
Say it with us. Sazerac.
Sazerac.
This classic cocktail was invented sometime around the 1850s, maybe even earlier. But Stephanie's story today happened about 150 years later, more than that, in 2009.
Yeah.
So why?
Eh? Because it was an old-timey time
exactly.
In 2009.
Yes.
They were looking backwards. They were putting on their suspenders.
That they were, yes.
And their mustache wax.
So before I really get into all of the reasons I chose this cocktail for this story, I would like to first go back and give a little background on the actual history of the Sazerac. So the Sazerac was invented in New Orleans. It's one of New Orleans' most famous cocktails, if not their most famous cocktail.
It's their most famous.
Yeah. There's also the Vucaré. There's the Ramos Gin Fizz.
Yes.
There are a lot
those
of...
Those are also very popular, yeah. But like the Sazerac is like it.
The one that is everywhere.
You see it everywhere. Yeah. Like signs for it. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the big one.
Some people claim that the Sazerac is one of the oldest American cocktail recipes ever recorded. Because it is a cocktail with like the sugar and the spirits and the bitters. And
older than old fashioned?
There's debate about which came first. Most people or a lot of people would say the old fashioned was first, but there's people that will cut a bitch in New Orleans if you try and say the old fashioned was first.
Sazerac was first to them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
They're like, not my cocktail.
That is exactly what they said. They have flags that say, let's go Sazerac.
Yes.
So there are actually two different possible origin stories, because this one's old. That's just how we do.
Yes.
Both of these origin stories involve a now defunct brand of cognac called Sazerac de Forge et Fils, and a pharmacist and Creole immigrant named Antoine Amédée Peychaud, who invented Peychaud's curative bitters.
Yes.
So one of these stories involves the owner of a New Orleans bar that was originally called the Merchant Exchange Coffee House, but he started importing this Sazerac de Forge et Fils cognac and changed the name of the bar to the Sazerac Coffee House.
Mm.
And he created a cocktail adding absinthe and locally produced medicinal bitters to his imported French cognac, and the rest is history. The other story is that Antoine Peychaud invented the cocktail himself as a way to boost sales of his medicinal bitters. There's some, you know, both of the stories could be possible. There's some validity to both of them. But either way, we do know that the Sazerac was invented in New Orleans sometime between the 1830s and the 1850s. And we also know that in the 1870s, when a root disease called phylloxera almost completely wiped out France's wine and brandy production, the cognac that is traditional in Sazeracs, or was traditional in Sazeracs until that point, was then replaced with American rye whiskey. And rye whiskey remains the main ingredient in a Sazerac today. Along with rye whiskey, the cocktail calls for these Peychaud's bitters, a sugar cube, and a little bit of absinthe in the glass. When absinthe was illegal in the United States and other like anise flavored liqueurs were used, you know, Sambuca, those kinds of things could have been used.
Yuck.
Yeah. But yeah, so the idea of absinthe being illegal in the United States, it no longer is, but that brings me back to the era of Stephanie's story finally. So as Stephanie mentioned before, the cocktail culture resurgence of the 2000 was in full swing in 2009. And many bartenders were moving backward from Prohibition-era cocktails that had been popular a little bit earlier to even older recipes by 2009. And not only were older cocktails making a comeback, but so were these old-fashioned spirits like rye whiskey.
Before, rye whiskey was like not a thing?
It was like an old-fangled thing that nobody was drinking.
It was not big before... Stop it.
Before the mid-2000s, the majority of American whiskey drinkers preferred bourbon.
It's sweeter.
It's easier to drink on its own.
I get it.
And we weren't really big cocktail people. Okay. You know what I mean?
Wow, rye is so classic.
Yeah. Yeah, but so in their quest for balance and flavor, these like 2000s era mixologists discovered that the dry spiciness of rye mixed better into cocktails with other flavors than the sweeter bourbon that's better as like a sipping liquor. So between 2007 and 2008, sales of rye whiskey spiked by 30% in 1 year.
Oh my God.
Yeah. According to Danielle Eddy of the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, which who knew that was a thing? Quote, rye, a key ingredient in many old-fangled cocktails.
Ooh, old-fangled. Yes. I like her.
Hasn't been this popular since the Great Depression.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And another thing that happened in 2007 was that the nearly century-old ban on absinthe in the United States was finally overturned. So suddenly all of these high-end cocktail bars across the country had both absinthe and rye on the shelves. And those are two out of the four ingredients in a Sazerac. But 10 years earlier, the Sazerac was almost completely forgotten outside of a few specialty bars in New Orleans. But thanks to cocktail historians like David Wondrich, by 2007, the Sazerac was on cocktail menus across the country. And in 2008, the Louisiana legislature voted to make the Sazerac New Orleans' official cocktail.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yes. Apparently, they tried to make it the state's official cocktail, and it failed.
Wait, what? Is there another state cocktail?
Yeah. But then, yeah.
Is it the
New Orleans official cocktail? They were like, yes, please.
That's hilarious. There are people who are just like, no.
Yeah. Damn you. Peychaud.
Again, not my cocktail.
Yeah. So yeah, by 2009, the Sazerac was everywhere, probably even more popular than it had originally been in its heyday in the 1850s, because it was like the entire nation was drinking them at this point. So the only other notes that I have are just a little bit of like a preparation notes. Some bartenders prefer to still use an anise-flavored liqueur rather than absinthe, which is, I guess, like a holdover from before absinthe was legal again. Some people still prefer these sort of anise liqueurs, anisette and that kind of stuff.
I don't know. Not familiar with them.
Yeah. And some bartenders prefer to use a mix of Peychaud's and Angostura bitters rather than just Peychaud's bitters.
Okay.
But other than that, almost all bartenders agree that a Sazerac should always be stirred, never shaken.
Okay.
And should always be served without ice in an oversized rocks or old-fashioned glass.
I did not know that. Yes, but that's the only way I've had it.
That's the way. That's the only way.
The only way.
Yes. Okay. So.
Yeah, let's try. Let's take a cheers first.
Take a little chip. Take a little cheers. Cheers and sip. Is it chip?
Chip. Yeah.
Chip.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
It smells nice. You can smell the bitters for sure. and the lemon. There's no lemon in the drink, but you like express the lemon peel over it.
Mm.
It's very spicy from the lye. It's very,
very
strong.
Very spicy.
Yeah. It's mostly like 98% just straight rye whiskey.
I guess I taste a little bit of the anise.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, just a like touch.
A whisper.
A whisper, yeah. Yeah, and then the bitters have a very sort of distinct flavor.
It's very strong tasting.
Yeah, it's mostly just whiskey. Yeah. A little bit of sugar. It's just gussied up rye.
So at the end of last season, I ended it by myth-busting President Barack Obama.
That you did.
I wrapped up the episode with my favorite myth of his. Like him being a man of peace.
Yes.
Which couldn't be further from the peace
truth. Prize.
Yeah. So did you know that Trump was angling for a peace prize?
Oh,
and
he was.
Three people nominated him, three different people.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I knew he was trying real hard and was real butthurt that it didn't happen. Like his buttocks were hurt.
Yes. Thank you. I'm just like, but what? But buttocks. Okay. Yes. Now I understand. Oh my God. It's whatever. My dad still can't say but, so I don't feel bad about
deal
this.
With it.
Yeah, so he got three people to nominate him, and he was really mad that he didn't get one too, because he just, you know, stays on.
I did know that Obama's he's very D. very upset that he did not get an award that Obama did.
Yeah,
he didn't even want the award.
No,
he just
didn't.
Wanted it because Obama got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, he's
such
so
petty.
He's such a petty, just like bully child.
Yeah,
like.
Patty LaBelle over here.
Yeah. But then it's like, don't do that to Patty. Patty
yeah, true.
That.
That's true.
We need like a petty name that we don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, so I'm here today with some receipts that show, despite talking a really good game, President Obama was like the rest of his predecessors. He was a man who racked up a largely invisible body count due to his eagerness to allow the CIA to use drone technology to wage our favorite war, our favorite forever war, the war on terror.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, seriously.
Doing that. So,
I mean, I get as like an incoming president, you can't know everything there is to know about everything there is to know about.
Totally. And he's coming in off the war on terror vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the war on data.
Ooh.
So he needed to maintain that like strong kind of position to the world, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he's coming in as a Democrat. He doesn't have a lot of experience, but if he's a hawk, then, you know, then that's something.
And that's, that's how he's going to keep the conservatives on his side.
Yeah.
Not.
I know, right?
They're going to hate you anyways. Just
they
do
take
what you
one
want
look
to do.
At, thank you. They take one look at you and they're just like, no, thank you. And also the war on terror is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Why are we warring against a feeling?
Seriously.
A feeling that we create in others when we do what we do.
Yeah.
Like, okay. It makes sense if you don't think about it. So Obama came to the White House like all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. He didn't have any military background.
Yeah.
He had very negligible like national security experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a recipe for a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
And he inherited a killing machine that was very much on the offensive.
Yeah.
Hunting down suspected terrorists. It was, it was 2008.
Yeah.
It was the time. And he was down for that type of hunt. He, in a very famous speech that he gave in 2002 opposing the Iraq war, he began by making it very crystal clear that he was not anti-war.
Huh.
He said, I'm not opposed to all wars. I'm opposed to dumb wars.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. He was taking a shot at his predecessor.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm not going to pretend that there are WMDs to go to Iraq to get oil for my daddy.
Yeah.
We need to be smarter. We need to have a plan. His whole thing was like precision. Like everything needs to be evidence-based and precise.
Was it though?
And that's, that's my scandal. How dare you?
Okay, episode over. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
I like that it unravels with one question. Was it though? The answer is no, it was not. So my scandal today is President Obama's first drone strikes. You know, the ones that he launched within 72 hours of being in office.
That is un-fucking believable.
And how these smart, tactical, counter-terrorism maneuvers carried out by the CIA hit the wrong fucking target right out the gate.
Good Lord.
Killing and maiming Pakistani people, minding the entirety of their business, Jesus, a world away. Christ. Yeah.
But what happened to all of that accuracy and
precision yeah. and like evidence-based targeting? That is the question. So on this one day, two drone strikes launched that would kill as few as 15 or as many as 18 Pakistani civilians.
Jesus.
The numbers are fuzzy for reasons that I will get into later. And their only crime was existing in a region that had known Taliban presence.
I mean,
yeah. Just being in the area.
That's unacceptable.
Yeah, unacceptable is what it is. But these first strikes really set the tone for his whole administration. And it's fucking trash.
Yeah.
But first, a toast.
A toast.
Let us toast. Let us raise our glasses to when warring for peace goes wrong. As it always does, because that's fucking stupid.
I mean, literally, warring for peace.
So question for you. Do you know when drone warfare started? Because I know nothing about the military. Like, I don't know anyone in the military. I know there were people at Cornell who are in the ROTC.
ROTC.
They just seemed like they were working out together. It never seemed like they were really going to do anything.
Yeah.
It seemed like a social club. Like they were LARPing.
I know. ROTC always felt like they were going to be like twirling flags or something. You know
totally. What I mean? Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I never got there. Like they could do anything other than work out together.
Yeah. Those like wooden guns that they had were like batons.
Yeah.
So wait, was the question?
I'm sorry, I got distracted.
I got distracted too.
when did drone warfare start?
Okay.
When do you think it started?
I don't see how that's any of your business.
Okay.
I have no idea.
I mean, knowing what I know now, obviously it makes sense. It started after 9/11. I thought it started before. I don't know why I thought it started in the 90s with like Somalia.
I guess
they went there and just bombed them.
I wouldn't imagine we would have had the technology really before 9/11.
We had the technology.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were working on it for a while. The technology has been around since I think it was the British. Yeah. Oh my God. All of the deep dives and like the spirals I went in researching this story, like all of the rabbit holes I like sunk into really briefly. So drones, they started to produce drones or at least think about the tech for drones in the 40s in Britain.
40s?
Yeah.
I'm just picturing like a little British man on like a hang glider, like dropping
bombs. It wasn't until the 70s, like I think it was 1974 when the first drone strike was launched successfully, and that was in Israel.
Okay.
But we've been working on them. We just hadn't killed anyone with them
yet. I just picture drones, like in my head, drones, it's like a video game or something.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, modern drones are different from the ones from the 40s.
Sure. Yes, of course.
The whole thing is like an unmanned aerial
vehicle.
I think it was more like a...
So like a remote control?
Kind of. Like a race car, but like...
Or like the remote control planes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes more sense now that I can picture that.
Yeah. We didn't have the like video game interface until after 9/11.
Yeah.
So, where was I?
At KB Toys.
Yes, I was at KB Toys. I was watching the little dog that flips over.
Yes.
I live for that dog. I wanted it so bad. So, the first CIA drone strike happened in 2002, so 20 years ago, and it killed 3 men.
Okay.
Reportedly, because the CIA believed one of these men was Osama bin Laden.
Okay.
Guess why?
He was brown? He had a beard?
Those things, but also the biggest characteristic that they were looking for was his height. I wish I was making this up. I wish I was his height.
How tall was he?
He should be 700 feet. But
I mean,
he's tall, but he's a regular. He was 6'5".
Okay, I didn't know that. That's very tall.
Yeah, but still.
I mean, I would go on a date with him.
Same, but just killing tall men with beards? Like, that's your intel. A tall man. You saw a tall man walking with two other people, and you decided to kill them because you thought one was Osama bin Laden.
That is.
Based on his height.
That's unacceptable. But also, like, you're killing off the Brooklyn dating pool. You can't kill off all the tall men with beards.
Come now. The tall men with beards who don't have to do anything other than exist with a tall beard.
Yeah.
A tall body and a beard.
Yeah.
It's like, do I like him or is he just tall?
Oh my God.
All those memes. So there was a lot of press around the first drone strike. They're just like, oh my God, you got him? Really? Did you? So fast. So when asked after the strike, the Pentagon confirmed that it was not Osama bin Laden.
And it was just a tall guy with a beard.
Yeah. They appeared not to know who they had killed.
Oh my fucking God. Of course they didn't.
Yeah. Reports later showed that the target, the suspected terrorist, was just collecting scrap metal.
For fuck's sake.
As a tall man. So I have a clip to share from the Pentagon press conference in the aftermath of this first strike, because it is really illustrative of the deadly fucking incompetence that is to come. Prepare your mind. Set your mind to stun.
You said you don't know who was killed in this attack, whether it's civilians, Taliban, or...
I'm sorry.
We don't know exactly who it was.
We don't know the identities of the individuals involved.
But you're convinced they're Taliban?
We're convinced that...
We're convinced it was an appropriate target. Based on the observation, based on the information, that it was an appropriate target. We do not know yet exactly who it was.
What does that mean? They're like...
It was an appropriate target.
They're like, but was it Taliban? It was appropriate. We didn't do bad.
Yes.
Couldn't possibly have done the wrong thing. So it had to have been the right
people. Yeah. We don't know who it was, but it was appropriate.
Yeah.
Next question.
Yeah. So, I love how they're like, but was it? And they're like, but it was fine.
Yeah. So this was Bush's first drone strike. Let's get into Obama's. It's interesting that both of their first drone strikes both missed their targets.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, is this a feature or a bug of this target precision weapons that we have? It's a feature. Turns out.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, is there like statistics on how many get the target versus how many...
Statistics are really hard to come by because
they don't want us to know.
Because
the CIA. Because they're like, it's fine.
Yeah. It was an appropriate target. Yes. What more do you need to know? So it goes without saying that Obama, he inherited two awful wars. I get it. However, he intensified a third war that was being waged covertly. And in many places, he expanded it.
Yeah.
So...
Nobody asked for this.
Yeah. I can give you a pass on the two that you didn't start and exacerbate, but like...
I mean...
I'm not a pass, but like...
Yeah, like, just stop it.
Right? Right?
Just stop it.
Have you ever just thought about just stopping it? Come on. So he escalated the drone strikes in Pakistan, and he expanded them into Yemen, Somalia, and Libya.
For why, though?
The war on data.
What
do you think I said?
Data.
Oh.
Which is also happening.
I was trying to sound like the Count.
Yes.
The war on terror.
Yes.
Which is just this amorphous thing that we can fight against. We can send all of our military might and budget towards.
Yeah.
Knowing that it's never going to end.
Damn you, Yemen.
So he approved drone strikes in Libya like... It was going out of style. 550 drone strikes hit Libya. Almost more than Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan combined. Yet we don't talk about it because
Libya sounds terrifying. So I'm scared.
That
sounds like an appropriate target to me.
It sounds brown and Muslim. Yes. And like no one's named Steve there. Yeah, so, exactly.
That's an appropriate target.
Appropriate target. So Obama was quickly sold on the this idea of like pinpoint, like laser focused killing. That there was a way that you could just kill someone who you really believed. I have to believe that he really thought that like you could kill people who were an imminent threat.
Sure.
But then again, it's like the whole legality of like, okay, you believe that they did this thing or they're about to do something, but they haven't yet.
So, yeah, they haven't been tried. But you're killing them. The like foundation of our democracy is like...
Totally. Innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
That doesn't apply for overseas. Or black people.
Yeah. I mean, it's maritime law, right?
Yeah. Casinos, et cetera. Come on. So he thought that it could keep Americans safe. And that sure. It was a way to avoid like a conventional war, like boots on the ground.
Yeah.
That there was a way to just kind of pick off these dangerous terrorists. I mean, again, it should be suspected terrorists.
Yeah, this is giving me Linwood Vikings vibes.
Like, totally, right? Yeah. Yes. It's giving me policing, like yeah. The wrong, like the gang policing.
Yeah, yeah.
But he thought that there was a way to do this without like endangering more American lives.
All right.
Because he was seeing all the people coming back from Iraq and all of their PTSD and like mm-hmm. all of the issues, blown off limbs,
yeah.
et cetera.
Yeah. I hate it, but I'll accept it.
But it's like, how do you know that these people are actually terrorists?
I mean, if the CIA is telling you like, we know for a fact.
Yeah.
And we know for a fact that we can kill them with pinpoint accuracy.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Yeah.
At first.
Thank you. Same, I guess. But it's really giving me like stop and frisk vibes. Mm. Like you fit the description. Yes. So we're going to rough you up. But also instead of roughing you up, we're just going to hit you with a bomb.
From the sky.
Yeah.
You don't see it coming.
And like the technology, even back then, was so good. It's like so silent. I think when we think of, or at least when I think of a drone, I think of like a wedding drone and how you can hear that like
sure.
3 miles away,
yeah.
the humming, mm-hmm. like it is silent.
Wow. Okay.
Silent. And it can hover over you like on a clear day and you won't even see it.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's really scary.
I don't like it.
I know. So I have a clip from Attorney General Eric Holder. Who's talking about how and why suspected terrorists are chosen and like how we get around like the war crimes of it all.
Yeah.
We only take these kinds of actions when there's an imminent threat, when capture is not feasible, and when we are confident that we're doing so in a way that's consistent with federal and international law.
Uh-huh. I'll allow it. I don't like it, but I'll allow it. I have questions, but I don't know.
As you should.
Yeah.
As you should. Because imminent threat sounds good. Like, they're about to...
But this is like, you can't police a crime that hasn't happened yet.
I know.
First of all.
Yeah.
How, you
can't... It's giving me Minority Report, like, thought crimes.
Yeah.
But back then, this is like post-Patriot Act, where they're listening in to everyone. So they're... In theory, maybe they have intelligence that says that they're trying to start some shit.
Yeah, they're going to. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're saying that they want to make something bad happen.
Yeah. Yeah. This is me being very generous. Like, and I think that was Obama's thinking, at least in the beginning. Like,
sure.
Okay. These people are pros. They say this thing is like targeted.
Yeah. I mean, you especially have said this on the show countless times before. Like if you're the first of anything, the first woman, the first black man, you have to be
the worst.
The worst. The have to be like the like strongest, mm-hmm. hardest, harshest.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. Or they're just going to come for you.
I mean, they're going to come for you anyway.
I know, but like it's a way to kind of protect yourself in their... Yeah, that's the way to play the game.
Yeah. And if the CIA is telling you that they have this technology that they know for a fact, without a doubt, that A, they're planning something, and B, that they can get them without... capture isn't feasible, blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
capture isn't feasible.
Like, why not?
But why not is the question. Why not is the question? And they don't answer it.
Yeah.
It's like we have the technology to hover a drone over them for weeks.
But and it yet, couldn't drop like a net instead of, you know what I mean?
I know, just, right? Oh my God, that'd be hilarious. That's I don't know. It feels very like Roadrunner and Coyote, totally, yeah. Like dropping a net from a drone or bomb thing.
I mean, why is that less feasible than a quiet, silent machine that drops from the sky to kill you?
Well, I think.
I mean, I do know why.
Yeah.
But like also, if we had tried to develop a different technology, we might have been able to do that.
Covert war that's happening, that's like not really that covert but kind of under the radar, it is happening in regions that, according to the U.S. government and also according to the countries themselves, are kind of lawless. We've never been officially at war with Libya or Syria or Pakistan or Somalia, even though we've had military interventions against them. So I feel like grabbing them is like, I don't know. I shouldn't say. But, like, they're not supposed to be there.
But grabbing them is worse than killing them there?
No. But I think the legality of grabbing someone and, like, them being innocent and them being like, what the fuck are you doing?
But how is that better than killing them without proving their...
I'm just saying, from an Eric Holder standpoint, who is the chief lawyer of the country...
Yeah. No, I know that you're not arguing for this. I'm just saying, like, what?
I'm 1,000% not arguing for this at all.
It's just, like, how is this better? How is not, like, if we had, you know, magically developed this technology to, like, snatch someone out of thin air and disappear them away into our jurisdiction.
I mean, they were disappearing people as well. Okay. They were renditioning people like it was going out of style.
Yeah, and I guess that's illegally. Not, I mean, knowing where they would have ended up, that's not better.
Yeah, but they were torturing a lot of them. I don't see how
it could have been worse.
It couldn't have been worse. Yeah. This is the worst. This is the worst case scenario by far.
Yeah.
So imminent threat, which is vague, but like we know what imminent means, right? Like it's bound to happen. It's going to happen very, very soon.
In theory.
In theory.
Yeah.
I like that you say in theory because I have a clip that talks about the theoretical nature of imminent.
Oh my God, yeah.
NBC News has obtained this confidential 16-page Justice Department memo. It says an imminent threat does not require the United States to have clear evidence that a specific attack on U.S. persons and interests will take place in the immediate future.
What? What?
So they changed the definition of imminent threat.
Imminent doesn't mean imminent, apparently.
Nope.
It's like a threat?
Totally. Yes. Yes.
Maybe.
Who can tell?
Yeah. Who can say?
It's possible, but I don't know.
How am I supposed to know? He's speaking Spanish.
Yes. A last bit of background before I really jump into to everything. Remember when I said that there were two different drone strikes and that at least 15 people or as many as 18 people, civilians, died?
Yeah. Yes.
So there's a lot of fuzziness in the numbers because the CIA doesn't know how many people it's killed. And I thought maybe they were just lying that like, this is information is like gonna has been redacted. Turns out they're just really bad at their jobs.
They just don't know.
So I have one more.
How am I supposed to know how many people were there?
Yeah,
they were an appropriate target.
Oh my God!
But I didn't go to school for math.
NBC News has examined classified documents detailing 114 drone strikes. They also reveal what U.S. officials don't know, like how many killed. Between 7 and 10 in one strike, 20 to 22 in another. It suggests U.S. officials don't always know exactly how many or who they're killing.
Jesus.
Yeah.
We don't know who or how many.
Yeah.
Maybe don't kill people then.
I mean, that,
have
yes.
Have we weighed that option?
I don't think we have. You weren't in the room to ask that very obvious question.
Just spitballing here. Maybe if we don't know who or how many people we're killing, maybe there's another option.
Perhaps. Yeah. I would have to agree with
maybe
you.
Maybe we could find
strongly.
Out first before.
Thank you. Let's maybe just find out who we're killing.
Yes.
Maybe just let's build that into our action plan.
Well, this is America. We prefer the fuck around part.
Yeah. Oh, we do. So with that fun background out of the way, let's get into it. So on the morning of Fribery. On the morning of Friday, January 23rd, 2009, CIA. Oh my god!
You clearly need to loosen your jaw gums.
I think I've loosened them.
They're too loose. Over loosened.
I think they're over loosened. Actually, I'm gonna have a tiny little.
I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Oh, a lot of things. Because I'm just starting my scandal. Okay, so on the morning of Friday, January 23rd, 2009, CIA Director Michael Hayden told Obama about these drone strikes that he was planning. He's like, hey, I've scheduled to do these bombs, to send these bombs to this tribal area of Pakistan. It's kind of on the border of Afghanistan. In this region that's called Waziristan, it's kind of semi-autonomous. Like, the Pakistani government is like, we can't regulate this area because they're so high in the mountains, and they're kind of just doing their own thing.
Sure. Okay.
So not our problem kind of thing, even though it's within our country. Like, do what you want to do there. Yeah. So Obama's like, okay.
He's like, word to your moms. Yes. To drop bombs. Yes.
So according to Hayden, the targets were high-level Al-Qaeda and Taliban commanders. And like, when I read that, I'm like, I call bullshit that they're both there. They're both
literally
there.
Yeah.
They're both there,
up,
though.
Up in the mountains in a place that like the government of Pakistan can't even regulate.
Yeah.
There's like a lair.
Like, both bad guys are there in the same place 3 days after you take office.
I mean, we should be so lucky.
You lie.
Literally.
Sorry. You fucking lie.
Lies.
So Hayden explained the deal to Obama. Like, he used to talk. So he is a holdover from George W. Bush.
Okay.
I should have started by saying that. So George W. Bush, he had a military background, even though he was dumb as rocks. Mm-hmm. So Hayden was able to talk to him in like military jargon speech.
Sure.
Like, he's able to talk about the geometry of a battlefield. I had to Google that term because I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
It just means like where your target is in three dimensions, like a way to box them in.
Sure. Okay.
And I'm just like, you guys are trying to sound really smart by using the word geometry. Like,
literally.
I see you.
Yeah. When we're really talking about geography.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Hilarious. It's true. Wow. See, that's how smart they are.
Yeah.
They don't know the difference. So he went into this like really granular detail. And I don't know if he did it specifically to like bore Obama, because President Obama, he really wanted briefings to be short, concise, and like to the point.
Sure.
Because he was actually trying to do his job. And like, yeah.
He had plenty of things to worry about.
He had a lot of things.
And I get like he doesn't need this like military guy just rambling on about geometry when he does not mean geometry.
No.
He's like the cosine.
Like, I know. Like, he's like tan, cosine, square root.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
I was like, you're talking about like where somebody is? What the fuck?
Yeah. So President Obama, according to aides, like was getting kind of like irritated at him. Like, dude, just say what you mean.
Yeah.
Like, what do you need from me? Like, how can I speed up this process? Like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. So he essentially told him, do what you need to do. Like, you are the professional. He raised no objections. So Hayden instructed his team to like get to it.
I mean, it seems like that was kind of the point the whole time, that he's like, if I just bore this guy and go over his head, he'll just tell me, like, do what I need to do.
Yeah. Do what I want to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is unfortunate because we're talking about killing people.
Yeah.
So you think that you could have paid attention or asked him to clarify.
Yeah. But it's day three.
Sure. Yeah, I get it. I mean,
but still, it's like,
we're still talking about killing people.
Yeah. Killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And two strikes. So meanwhile, in Pakistan, people on the other side of the world were just, you know, living their lives. They heard like a low buzz But when they looked up in the sky, they couldn't see anything.
Okay.
So I watched the video of, like, just drones from 2009. They were so small.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear them when they were up close, but you really couldn't see them on a clear day.
Okay.
Because yeah. they're, like, white and they kind of blend in. Like, I don't know. Yeah. However they're designed, they kind of, like, reflect the light.
Sure. Okay.
So, yeah, they heard a little something and they're like, that's weird. And they just went about their lives because yeah. they couldn't see shit. So at about 8:30 in the evening, a Hellfire missile slammed into a compound of interest.
Oh, a compound of interest.
Yes, of interest, incinerating all of the people in the room.
Oh, Jesus.
Turns out they were the wrong people.
But were they an appropriate target?
No, they weren't. Surprising, right?
Yeah. I'm shocked. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that at all.
So as the CIA's drone, like, lingered high above, because they make the drones, and I think it's a good thing, survey the area for a while after.
Yeah.
In the aftermath. Even though they are shooting these rockets like it's a video game, it is a human operator watching and looking at all these limbs and, like, seeing the casualties. Jesus and a lot of them have really, really, really bad PTSD.
Uh-huh.
So this drone was lingering above. They were relaying live images of the fallout to its operators. It soon became really clear that they had hit the wrong target.
Oh, God.
Something went really, really wrong. Instead of hitting the CIA's target, apparently a Taliban hideout, the missile had hit the compound of a prominent tribal elder and members of a pro-government peace committee.
Oh, my fucking God. Are you fucking kidding me?
I wish I was kidding. People trying to get rid of the Taliban, trying to promote peace. So the strike killed the elder and four family members, including two of his kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. There's nothing to say.
Yeah. This story was really hard to research because there was a lot of, there's just been so much, the CIA calls it blowback, you know, unintended survivors or just people who lost lost family members who are mad and, like, you know, they want justice. And it, yeah.
They're mad that they killed their relatives? Why?
Yeah. So backing up, a 13-year-old Fahim Qureshi was in Pakistan. He was feeling kind of impatient. He was at his uncle's house. He was with neighbors. He was with elders. He was kind of waiting around, but also feeling like, oh, I want to hang out with my friends. Mm-hmm. Because there was a playground close to this lounge area. So he was hoping to go to the playground to hang out, to play some cricket with his little homies. It had been a long day. It's Friday prayers that go into the afternoon. And afterwards, his mother asked him to go to the store for groceries because they were going to have people over
mm-hmm.
later. So it was a happy occasion.
Jesus Christ.
Really happy occasion. And I'm sorry that I'm going into these details, but no, I think it's really important.
It is.
Because this is just one story.
Because people never hear the, like, human aspect of these, like, mistakes.
Yes. These horrible, deadly mistakes that happen every day. In places far away. And this country is doing it on our behalf, so it says.
And literally all we ever hear is like, oh, the CIA made an oopsie.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
No, these were people living their lives, children, mothers, like playgrounds, grocery stores.
Regular human shit.
Yeah.
Living their lives, just having a regular Friday. So it was actually a special Friday because his uncle had just gotten back from the UAE where he had been working. A lot of people in Pakistan, they work in a different country and they send money back home. Mm-hmm. But then they come back home. They're just there temporarily as like contract workers.
Sure. Yeah.
So he was home. So a lot of people stopped by. They're like, oh, my God, you're back. Oh, like, hey, let's. Oh, my God. So it was a happy, happy occasion. And Fahim, he heard something that sounded like a plane taking off. He's like, okay, that's weird. 2 seconds later, a missile rips through the lounge.
Jesus.
Setting everything ablaze. He remembers feeling like his body was on fire, because it was. Uh-huh. He stumbled outside somehow and realized, because he wanted to put water on his face because his face was burning, he realized he couldn't see.
Oh my God. He
was blind.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But he survived. Uh-huh. He and many people survived. There were 9 casualties in that one strike. I feel like now is the time to just take a little break.
Good Lord. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, this is Brandon from Peculiar Picture Show, the podcast that talks about movies, maladies, and mental health.
And this is Maria, also from that podcast.
So we were wondering, do you like movies? Do you like mental health?
Oh boy, do I ever, Brandon.
Well then, I've got a podcast for you. Peculiar Picture Show is the podcast for you because it is about movies and mental health.
That's right. We use movies to talk about mental health issues like borderline personality disorder, social issues like systemic racism, and other things.
Like how bad Shakespeare in Love was.
Yeah, sometimes we just talk about how bad the movie is.
And we really talked about that one. But sometimes we have games. Maria used to be a teacher, and so she loves to quiz people.
I really do.
So check us out online at peculiarpicture.show. That's our website, and you can stream all episodes there.
Or you can find us on any major podcast channel.
And we're back.
And we are back. We just watched a music video.
Yes.
Of a drag queen.
We needed it.
Yeah. A drag queen called Alaska. Stephanie said something earlier about setting my brain to stun.
Yes.
And there's a music video of Alaska with Gia Gunn where the song is just called Stun. And Gia's just like, stun.
Yes. That's her contribution. Yeah. And then she raps later.
Yeah.
And it is gold.
It is. That is one word for it.
Yeah. It is the only word for it. It will be in the show notes. It's really, really good.
Stun.
But yeah, then Tugs was like, oh, you know, there are these words that are that just like take you to a place.
Yes. Yeah. I used to work for, I don't know if I should say where it was that I worked, because this is not a nice thing to do.
Well, oh, okay. So you worked for an organization.
Yes, I worked for an organization, and we used to interview people, and me and my boss would have like these code words where I don't even remember what the words meant, because this was like 10 plus years ago. I just remember.
So clever that you would even think to do that. Yeah. I've interviewed many people with someone else, and like, we're just like, oh yeah, tell me later what you think about them. But you guys had like active
code words. We're like, this is not the one, or we really like this one.
Oh. Okay, yeah, nice.
Parameters was one of the words, and I can't remember what it negative, meant anymore. Though. I don't remember, honestly. Oh, you don't even remember?
Yeah.
I just remember anytime I hear the word parameters, now I think about working for this place and doing these interviews. But I wish that I could remember what it meant.
And just like how you work in parameters.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and that was kind of the point, is like you didn't want it to be a word that you would accidentally say.
Say, yeah, which is so smart.
Yeah, but then also difficult to just work the word parameters into a conversation.
Speaking of parameters, like, but then it's like you just hope that they don't feel how off that is.
Yeah, yeah. She was really good at being like, just sort of like finding a way to work. And so tell me about the parameters of like,
oh,
this.
Oh, your past job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ooh. Wow. I wish I was that. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm like, you're giving me tips.
Yeah, I know.
You're giving me tips, and thank you. But yeah, I feel like we needed a moment of like laughter.
Levity. Yeah, for sure. I definitely. Yeah. Stephanie got up to go to the bathroom, and I was like, I had Stun stuck in my head, and I was like, I need to watch this. Share it with Stephanie.
It's so good. So back to my story. I'm sorry. So these drone missiles, they hit 2 houses in this one village, and they killed either 8 or 10 people. There's reports that the other house was empty. So maybe it was 9 people, but like the numbers are just so fuzzy because, as we learned, the CA doesn't know shit about shit.
So
when they hit supposedly targeted strikes.
So like they, my question is, like, how did the missile hit the wrong building, or did they have the wrong building? Like, they knew what their target was supposed to be?
They had the wrong building.
So they had, the target was wrong.
The target was wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. And yet...
How is that possible? You don't know that there's just, like, a family of people hanging out and, like...
Especially when you have a drone hovering over for hours. You don't know? How don't you know?
And why did you think, like, where did you get the idea that it was this other thing?
I will get into possibly that question in a moment. The Pakistani government is trash. The Pakistani government is providing the intel.
Okay. But this group that they accidentally hit was pro-government.
Yes. Twas.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's... I love the way that your mind is trying to make sense of this.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it is so horrific and it doesn't make sense. And like, just everything wrong was done. And it's really, really upsetting. So there was a second attack that occurred hours later, also in Waziristan. And it killed either 7 to 9 people.
Okay. Okay. Who can say?
Yes. Who could possibly say?
They don't have the geometry figured out.
The battlefield geometry, yes, no. So it took nearly 40 days for Fahim to leave a series of hospitals after his injuries. Shrapnel had punctured his stomach. He had deep cuts all over his upper body. Doctors operated on the left side of his entire body, which sustained a lot of burns because I don't know if you know about hellfire missiles. They are called hellfire for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they are explosives, but they're also just fire and shrapnel.
Yeah.
So it's like shooting swords out.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And shrapnel is specifically put into this bomb to catch bystanders.
That's
to catch people who are running.
So it's like napalm with shrapnel.
Kind of, yes. But worse, because it's supposed to be targeted and it's not. So he had a lot of burns because the whole room he was in was set ablaze. He had to have laser surgery to repair his right eye. They couldn't save his left eye.
Okay.
So his remaining family, they kept the worst of like the casualties. They didn't tell him that his uncles died.
Uh-huh.
They didn't tell him that his 21-year-old cousin that he was really close to, a cousin who was about to go to the UAE for work as well, died. They didn't tell him that 14 of his cousins were now without fathers.
Jesus Christ.
And that he was now the head of household.
Wow.
Yeah. They didn't tell him this because they wanted him to get well.
How old was he again?
13.
13.
So maybe he's either 13 or 14. He was 13 when it hit. And this is 40 days later. So in a statement, the Pakistani government said that the attack destroyed the houses and killed 8 people, which is like, okay, it didn't, but close enough, I guess. In their statement, they said that militants had surrounded the area and retrieved the bodies. They also told the New York Times that these men were terrorists. Their evidence was that they were Arab, but other sources say that they were just locals. So their government, similar to our own, classified all combatants as men of a certain age.
Uh-huh.
Like anyone of like fighting age is just considered a combatant. And this is who the U.S. government is getting their intelligence from.
I was just going to say, like, why are we listening to them if they have no information that's worth listening to?
Yeah. This is our intelligence. However, according to a reporter named Daniel Clydesman, he wrote a book about Obama's drone strikes, and a book called Killer Capture. So he found a leaked Pakistani government document that recorded 9 civilians, which is what Fareed says. Okay. There were 9 of them. 9 civilians being killed in that one drone strike. In an unredacted version seen by The Guardian, Qureshi's village and his dead uncle was named, like, by name.
Wow.
So they knew. they were a party to.
Sure.
And they were covering their ass, being like, oh, these people were terrorists. That's why they were killed. Like, yeah. Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see. We're not. It's fine. We're not allowing a foreign land to just kill our citizens. They were terrorists. They were Arab. Get the fuck out of here. So Obama, he learned of this, the fact that they didn't hit their target that day. And he was visibly like really upset. And it's like, okay, that's the least you can do is be a little upset.
So like you never let this happen again. End of story.
Yeah. He was upset, but not enough to really do anything about it other than giving the CIA a stern talking to.
Oh.
The next day.
Good job. Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama is right. So the next day, he walks into the Situation Room. Aides say that, like, oh, you could tell that he was really upset when he walked into the room. The way he walked into the room.
I wonder why. You could tell
there was tension. Yeah, I wonder why.
9 innocent people were dead for no fucking reason.
So an anonymous aide said, you could tell from his body language that he was not a happy man. Bitch, what?
Oh, you guys can't hear my eye rolling.
Yeah.
Eyes, both of them, not just one.
Just one eye rolling. That's hilarious. Just the left eye.
Yeah.
The right eye is okay.
Yeah.
So Obama, he was seated directly across from Hayden, the CIA director at the time. And their conversation apparently quickly devolved into some light shouting. Obama was really upset about the CIA supposedly sound vetting procedure.
Yeah.
He's like, help me to understand what the fuck happened.
Literally.
How both of the two drones that I sent didn't hit their targets. Like, riddle me that.
Neither of them. And you fucking told me.
Yeah.
Precision and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Evidence based, targeted. Yeah.
And my name is on this and people are dead.
Yeah, children are dead in some cases.
Yeah.
So in this meeting, Obama learned for the first time the term. It's a very controversial practice, yet very widely used in like American drones. It's called signature strikes. You've probably seen it in like print and like not known what it was because it is everywhere. Now that I know the term, I just did a random Google search of signature strikes. And that's all of the drone strikes that they talk about in the media. So for those who don't know, which is literally everyone, signature strikes target groups of men who bear certain defining characteristics associated with terrorist activity.
What does that mean?
Usually age. Age is kind of all. Young men gathering together is terrorist activity.
This is giving me police vibes for sure.
Right? Yes. A group of young men is terrorist activity in certain areas where there is Taliban presence.
What?
So the identities of these targets of these signature strikes aren't known. Never known. Never known. We don't know who these people are. I'm gonna let your mind explode and I'm gonna take a sip. Oh, your cocktail's done.
I am stunned. I can't. This is no. So Obama was like, no, we're not doing this. And that's the end.
Oh, I wanna live in that world that you just created. No, that's not the end. The CIA director, he was trying to explain, like, okay, what the fuck is going on? So he explains signature strikes and Obama is like, this is unacceptable. Like, what is the alternative? Like, can we know who we're killing? So there is a strike that's called a personality or a high value strike. In these strikes, the terrorist leader is positively identified before the missile is launched.
Imagine that. Wow. What a great idea. Right? I mean, still shaky.
Yeah.
But much better.
At least you know who you're killing.
In theory, yes. Yeah.
So signature strikes are called crowd killings in these areas where they happen frequently. That's like not their real term, but like that's what they are. They are crowd killings. Whenever 4 or more people gather, oftentimes bombs are dropped.
And so like they forgot to mention this the day before.
Yes, they did. Just
oopsie.
Yeah. Obama wanted a concise thing, so they just never mentioned it.
Seems like a little bit of an important detail yeah. that you might want to include in your concise description of what you're about to do, but what do I know?
Yeah, so Obama got really upset. He didn't understand, like, how, like, this was business as usual. Like, this is just what we do. So there was a CIA deputy director who kind of stepped in and offered, like, a kind of a blunt explanation for why they needed to do these signature strikes so often. He said, "Mr. President, we can see that there are a lot of military-age males down there, men associated with terrorist activity, but we don't always know who they are." Obama's like, that's not good enough for me.
That's not good enough. And yeah. maybe if you
weren't... Yeah, he was still listening.
Yeah, I know. Maybe if you weren't just killing any groups of men of a certain age, there wouldn't be so many fucking terrorists.
And there we go. This is the war on terror by creating terror.
Why do you think that they yeah. hate the... why do you think that they hate Americans
because
and America?
Because they're killing indiscriminately.
Anyone that's of a certain age,
yeah.
you could
gather just... together, praying often. Again, it's just one story. But this is the first story, and it predicts a larger pattern.
Yeah.
So Hayden jumps in, because his deputy was just like, oh, no, this is what we do. Like, you know, this is how it is.
Yeah.
So Hayden, he jumps in, and he says, you could take out a lot more bad guys when you targeted groups instead of individuals. He went on to say, and there was another benefit. The more afraid militants were to congregate, the harder it would be for them to plot, plan, or train for attacks against America or its interests.
No one can gather. Men can't gather in groups of...
I want to do a mini about this, but I think I'm going to have to wait until next season. But... it's really bad. Like, the drones are really bad, you guys. Like, there's this thing called a double tap that happens. They will shoot a bomb, and they will wait for people, usually in the community, family members, to grab bodies, and they hit again. This is against all UN laws. This is a war crime. But they say that, like, oh, they're terrorists.
And they're, like, the women and children that are trying to gather the bodies are yeah. terrorists as well.
And, like, there's accounts of people who are, like, they're just driving in, like, two cars in front of them. A bomb, like, I guess a suspect is targeted in a car ahead of them. And they want to go help. And then the person in the car who's already injured are saying, like, go away. They're going to shoot another bomb. And usually they do. It's like, it's so illegal, and it's so, I mean, it should be illegal. It's clearly legal. They've been doing this for 20 years. But it's like, it is so bad, because I think there's a lot of, anyways, I'm jumping ahead. I think there are a lot of Americans who really think that this country is a force for good. And I used to believe that until I learned history.
Yeah. I mean, I was not of that delusion. But I didn't Catholic know that school. This like, was
I
happening.
I believed in a lot of things that aren't true.
Yeah. yeah. But I didn't know that this is what we were doing. I yeah. knew that there were a lot of drone strikes, and I knew that it was horrific, but I yeah. had no idea how bad.
Yeah. So back to...
And just how like chaotic and disorganized.
Chaotic is the word.
And
yeah. It is a free-for-all.
Nonsensical. Like it just don't make no sense.
They act like they have intelligence, but like their intelligence like is so, it's so flawed. It just makes me feel like they just want to kill people.
I mean, clearly that's yeah. what's happening.
So back to Qureshi, he was suddenly the elder male as a tween. He's now mostly blind. They were able to restore some of the sight to his one eye, but now he had to care for his mother's, his siblings. He wanted to be a chemist, like he was studying chemistry, but all of that disappeared.
Yeah.
His goal was just keeping his family afloat. So 13 years later, which is now, it's been 13 years since this happened, Qureshi has never received so much as an admission from the U.S. that it happened. The CIA declined to comment for the Guardian article that I pulled a lot of my information from. The CIA, they deferred to the White House, and the White House provided like their press person to just, you know, field all these comments, and like he had a lot to say. Obama, it is worth noting that Obama has in the past expressed regret for a failed bomb strike. It has happened one time in the 8 years that he was president.
And how many strikes were there?
Oh my God, that we know of, over 1,000.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
So his regret came in 2015. It was a drone strike in the same area, basically, the Afghan-Pakistan border region, and it killed 2 Western hostages.
Oh my God.
So the White House, you know, they wouldn't comment on like specific cases outside of that.
They were a certain age and they were gathered together.
Yeah. Like they were in community with one another. Like they were related. Like they were family or neighbors. So this is a quote from the National Security Council spokesman, Ned Price. He said, "The U.S. government takes seriously all credible reports of non-combatants," and by non-combatants, they mean civilians, but mm-hmm. they like to have this jargon, so there's separation when you read it. "Takes seriously all credible reports of non-combatants' deaths and injuries. In those rare instances in which it appears non-combatants may have been killed or injured, after-action reviews have been conducted to determine why and ensure that we are taking the most effective steps to minimize such risks to non-combatants in the future."
What? A, that's word salad.
It's legal mumbo-jumbo.
Yeah.
Detached of humanity. Yes.
But B, even if you can, like, crack away and get to the kernel of what he's actually trying to say,
not it's his lies. Problem. Yeah. Oh,
it's it lies. Is, you're it not doing lies. Anything no. to stop anything from happening no. to non-combatants.
Yeah, they're not doing anything.
All of these strikes seems yeah. like they're against non-combatants.
So many of them were.
And nothing's being done to stop it. And nope. you're just like, no, we have to.
Yeah.
Because we don't know any better.
Yeah.
And like, if we stop, then they'll hate us and kill us. I'm like, because you're killing them yeah. for no reason.
He went on to say, "Although we will not comment on specific cases where non-combatants killed or injured in a U.S. strike, condolence or other ex gratia payments such as solatia may be available for those injured and the families of those killed." So I had to look up these words.
I'm like, who's solatia?
Yeah. It is legal mumbo jumbo. So ex gratia and solatia payments mean that it is a payment done out of sympathy, not taking ownership of,
sure.
of the action.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, but like, I didn't cause it. It's but like, not, here's some money. Yeah, I'm not exactly. liable
uh-huh.
for
yeah.
the damages.
Yeah. But like, here, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. So in his first interview with an American journalist, and it was done via like a translator, Qureshi said that are we not the same human beings as these 2 Westerners that were killed? Because it was the same region. Like, it's just,
yeah.
it's so upsetting. So the 2 hostages who were accidentally killed in this targeted strike,
mm-hmm.
as many people are accidentally killed in these targeted strikes,
mm-hmm.
there one was a U.S. citizen named Warren Weinstein, and the other was an Italian citizen named Giovanni Loporto. Their families got apologies and they got payments, because you can't accidentally kill white people.
Yeah, yeah.
And get away with it. So Qureshi, he just wants what they got as well. Yeah. And everyone,
I mean, he deserves more than an apology and a payment.
Absolutely.
But like,
absolutely.
At the very
at
least.
At the bare minimum, which is all you're going to get.
Yeah.
Actually, you're not going to get it. You're yeah. not going to get the bare minimum. He just wanted what they were quickly given to.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah.
So we will never really know how many civilians the U.S. killed in drone strikes. The Bureau of Investigative Journalism has tried to keep like a running tally, but it's hard to know with these crowd killings
mm-hmm.
how many people were killed, because we are kind of using the government's numbers and like estimating, but their numbers, as you heard in the clip, are very fuzzy. They're not precise. And the government count is actually fucking trash because it assumes all men of a certain age are enemy combatants.
That doesn't
make any sense. And that is simply not the case. Yeah.
You, like, no sense at all.
Yeah. According to the government, get this, and I'm glad that you're seated. According to the government, drones killed single digit worth of civilians every year.
What?
Which is not even a good lie, because 15 at the very least were killed in this one strike.
Literally, yeah. It makes...
On day three. Oh my
God. And so, I mean, first of all, Obama is trash for letting this continue. The fact that this didn't end after day four,
that
he didn't walk in and say, no, we're not doing this anymore. Yeah. If this is the result, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
That's trash. But also, if I remember correctly, you said in the last episode where you kind of brought this up a little bit, how many drone strikes were being done under Bush before?
A lot, right? Oh my God. Yeah. Fewer by like eightfold.
Eightfold. Like the fact that he not only accepted that the CIA was like, well, this is just how we do it. And this is how we have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
But not only that, we increased by eightfold at least.
Yeah.
Under Obama.
And Trump took it away.
I'm sure.
Like,
oh my God.
Like, you don't even want to know.
Literally just breeding future hatred and terrorism.
Breeding terrorism. Keeping them in business, though.
Yeah.
So the congressional committee meant to oversee the CIA helped it to block transparency.
Of course it did. Yeah. Because that's how we do.
Yeah. In 2000. And a lot of it is because of all of the illegality about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to just, we can't talk about this because what we're doing is very, very illegal. So the Senate Intelligence Panel chairwoman, a woman named Dianne Feinstein.
Oh,
did this shit. She stripped Christ. A requirement for public disclosure of drone casualties from an intelligence operation bill. She stripped it after the director of national intelligence, a man named James Clapper, assured her in a letter that Obama was going to do better. He was going to find his own ways to disclose more about its highly controversial drone strikes.
So then, like, why would we need any accountability?
No. Oh, your own ways? your own ways? Me. Oh, why didn't you say that? Yeah, that was enough for her. A vague promise to do right? Okay. Term limits now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Term limits then, actually. So over the years, Qureshi and his attorneys, they've tried to get justice for him through various channels. Like, they haven't had any success, but they went to the UN's Human Rights Council. They went to the U.S. Embassy. They didn't give a fuck. They went to the Pakistani tribal liaison. They didn't give a fuck. So, yeah, he acknowledges that he's never going to be a chemist. He's never going to live the way that he wanted to live.
Did they tell the Nobel Committee?
Yeah.
Shit.
And despite it all, he's like still... His only goal is getting his siblings educated.
Yeah.
He's like, I've had my chance and, like, you know, this, it is what it is. All I want is to do right by them. That's why I want this money. Like, I want to be able to educate them properly. He hopes that he could, you know, he can afford it. He does not believe that, this is a quote, ordinary Americans are evil or unjust. He just urges us to not believe what our government is telling us about drone strikes in Pakistan. He goes on to say, I am the living example of what drones are.
What an unbelievably generous attitude towards Americans.
I know. And I think it's because the people who he was surrounded by before they were incinerated were men of peace.
Yeah.
Who wanted to make the best of things, who are trying to shake off the Taliban, who know that, like, there is a problem in Pakistan that needs to be solved, but, like, this ain't it.
This is not how you do it.
Yeah. So I think that's part of his generosity. And it's so sad.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a really hard story to research, but I think it's really important to tell stories like this.
Yeah.
Because I think many people are, because we're dealing with so much here, and there's so much that's wrong in mm-hmm. this country, but mm-hmm. there are people who believe that, like, our very white supremacist system of policing stops with our borders. It does not. It extends throughout the world.
Yeah. It's, if it looks bad on the streets here,
yeah. oh,
it's worse where we can't
so
see it.
So much worse.
Yeah.
So much worse. So, yeah. Women and children, like non-white women and children, are being executed. Men are being executed. Communities are being executed for just being in communion with one another. And it's not okay. And I think it's easy to read statistics. And I know that, like, when I see statistics, like, my eyes glaze over. But that's why I picked this, like, one story, the first story,
yeah,
to show a pattern, a really unfortunate, deadly pattern. So there were a total of 563 drone strikes that we know of targeting Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen, plus 550 other drones that were dropped on Libya during Obama's two terms. And that's just a lot. You know? That's a lot to take in.
Yes.
But I think talking about, like, one story, one really, really horrific story, is a way to kind of reckon with that scale. So Obama, he left the White House having vastly expanded and unfortunately normalized the use of these targeted CIA drones in these areas within sovereign nations, in these areas where things feel a little lawless, there's already conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really, really awful. So since the U.S. started using drones, 36 other countries followed suit.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The action of our country in reaction to 9/11 has made the world dramatically less safe under the guise of fighting terror.
Mm-hmm.
We have, and we still are, giving huge portions of the globe PTSD.
Yeah.
By the way that we wage war covertly. Like, it's really bad, y'all. Like, I was going to end with this video of a child talking about how his mother was killed and how he like, fears being outside when... He fears clear days.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when the bombs strike. On cloudy days, he feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, the end. It's like we've taken away sunny days from children.
Yeah. I had no idea.
I had no idea either. Same. None. I hear about targeted strikes and I'm like, okay, they got a target. They got a target.
It means nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. It nothing at all.
It has no meaning.
Nothing at all. It means they killed someone or someone's oftentimes. So yeah, it's just, yeah, this story was a lot. But it needed to be told because I assume, like you, that people were competent, that they were completing tasks, they were hitting targets.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the case.
Well,
I know, and I'm like, this is the last scandal of the season, but. I don't know. I don't know what to say, but it needed to be told. And I hinted at telling it last season. And when I started to look into it, I really didn't want to tell the story.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm like, I want to do anything other than this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Can I do something other than this? But then it's like, I kept seeing more and I'm like, I need to talk about it.
Thank you for putting yourself through the research and putting the story together, because I know it's not easy. I know. What is wrong with us?
Everyone, I keep going back to that. Everyone is the hero of their own story. These people really believe that everyone is conspiring against this country.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're giving people reasons to conspire against this country.
Exactly.
By acting like they're already doing it.
Yes.
And it's so counterproductive. And they know this. Like, they've done studies, and, like, I had to take so much out of my outline. There was the first study on blowback, because, you know, decades and decades of CIA fuckery from, you know, 50s onward. They're just like, oh, you know, we're doing all these things, but, like, we're creating a reaction. Who would have thunk it?
Who could have seen this coming?
They did a big study in 1997, I believe, and it just said that, like, doing these covert operations creates terrorists.
You're making it so much worse. That was 1997. Here we are, 30 years later, still doing it, still doing more than we were then.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's really scary.
It's a miracle that we're not being.
Oh yes, since Iraq, I'm just throwing this out there. Since Iraq, we've put wars on credit.
Of course, I'm not shocked by that.
I was shocked.
I mean,
I'm like interest on like. Truly, like, we don't even have the cash like that, and we're
I mean, we're like trillions of dollars in debt, like,
because of this.
Yeah.
So before 9/11,
it was Reagan that really started it. But
yeah, I think he changed the tax code, right?
Yeah.
So we stopped paying for wars with increased taxes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. We just started putting it all on our bill.
Oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
And I'm like, oh, this is why we don't have healthcare and other things. Anyways, the end.
Yay.
Sorry, guys.
Thanks for listening.
You have a summer to recover from this story.
Seriously, I need months. I may never be the same.
Tux has perished.
Yes. Died of dysentery.
Oh my God, your oxen.
My oxen, the axle
your
broke.
Oxen.
I thought my story
it's
was
awful.
Be too much.
Your story was a lot.
Yeah.
I cried in both stories.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Equally bad. So I don't feel bad. Your story was just as bad.
Yeah. Happy Pride.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week with the last mini of the season. And then you guys know the drill. We'll have some
mini episodes, re-releases for you all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not this episode because everyone hates me.
No, it's so good that we know this because everyone needs to know this. Why is this not being talked about more? Yeah. But yeah, my drink is long gone and has been.
Yeah, mine's done as well.
America's history is juicy. We just add basically straight rye whiskey a little bit of like a whisper of flavor.
Ooh, whisper.
Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Alerzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
We're sorry for crushing your souls.
Yeah.
But really, it should be Obama who is
he did
sorry.
This to us.
Yeah.
He Thanks, should Obama. Be sorry. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We could not do this without you, Tim. All right. Thanks, guys. Have
Bye.
A great summer.
Yeah.
School's out for summer. I'm gonna sign my yearbook. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians, we're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.